This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
The big news today: multiple injuries for Myles Garrett. We finally found out Achilles, thigh, and feet injuries. To talk about this and more, we welcome on our own Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Other than that, Myles is feeling great.
So, am I just being overreactive that when I hear the word Achilles on the injury report, that I immediately went to, well, maybe we should start talking about sitting Myles?
No, because that's what I was thinking too, because that's not going to get any better, and especially if Myles is telling us after games that he's compensating for his feet, and you know he wouldn't get specific about what was bothering him, but then we find out today it's his, it's his Achilles and then his thigh. So clearly it's a domino effect, and it's not going to get any better because his feet aren't going to get any better. So I think it's a fair conversation to have whether or not to sit him down for a week or two. Obviously, the other part of the conversation is, what good does that do? Does he heal, or is this something that is going to require significant time off for him to heal? So obviously, the Browns, I think, have those questions behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, it ain't good. The offensive line ain't good. Myles Garrett ain't good. Game's won in the trenches. So I don't know that bodes well for the future going forward.
Daryl, if that Achilles is more significant than we're making it out to be right now, are there guys that can actually get through and help this defensive line, or are they going to rely more on the corners?
No, there's not. I mean, it's Myles Garrett. Like, he's the reigning defensive player of the year, and I have no expectation that anyone on that defensive front is going to be able to give you what Myles Garrett can give you, because he demands so much attention that he makes other guys' jobs easier up front. You know, you're talking the Za'Darius Smiths of the world. Maybe Alex Wright is the guy. He's obviously off to a pretty good start. Maybe he's the guy you slide in there. You got Obo Okoronkwo, but like if you lose Myles Garrett for an extended period of time, that is a crushing blow to your defense, again, just because not only what he gives you on the field, but the attention that he commands when he's out there. And right now, he's basically playing 50% of the snaps.
Daryl, the O-line has been abysmal off and on throughout these first three games. Wyatt Teller on the pup there, or sorry, the IR for at least the next 4 weeks. We're still waiting to figure out what's going on with Jed. And then you've got Jack Conklin. Is he coming back? And now Zach Zinter's your right guard. Oh, by the way, DeJuan Jones still playing hurt. Yeah. Of the messaging that you've heard, what are the things that stood out of what the Browns have been saying about the O-line and trying to get that righted?
Well, I really don't believe a word of it, quite frankly. I asked Kevin Stefanski point blank today, did they bring these guys back too early in Conklin and Wills? He said no. I'm going to disagree because Conklin didn't even make it back to the field, and he pulled a hamstring. And then Jed Wills comes back, and boom, his knee's bothering him again. DeJuan Jones was never right from day one, coming back off of his knee surgery. I don't have a lot of confidence that they manage these injuries properly. I'm a little nervous about the state of this offensive line, especially the tackle position. They went ahead and they elevated German Ifeidi, and we saw what that did in the preseason, so that's not really much of a solace or sigh of relief. Sebastian Gutierrez and Ricky Lee III, they were signed to the practice squad.
One more time. I've never heard of either of these gentlemen ever, and I feel like I know almost every football player alive. Ricky Gutierrez,
yes.
Sebastian the third. Something, the it, third?
It's, no, it's Ricky Lee III and Sebastian Gutierrez.
All right, so Ricky Lee III is not a country artist?
Well, because you've not heard of these guys, I'm scrambling to pull up their bios now because I hadn't heard of them either. So,
I think the Browns are the ones scrambling, if we're being fair.
I mean, this is where we're at, Nick. I mean, it is what it is. Gutierrez, first NFL season out of the powerhouse that is Minot State. Lee is in his second NFL season out of North Carolina A&T. At least I've heard of North Carolina A&T.
Minot State, huh?
Minot State. Minot? M-I-N-O-T. I'm thinking the T is silent.
Minot.
Minot.
Well, maybe it's like French. Minot.
Like a fine wine.
Why is it that when I make things weird, everybody has to make it weirder?
It's actually Minot State.
Minot State? Minot
State? Yeah, it's in North Dakota.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Division II or FCS?
It's actually like a JUCO school. I guess.
Oh, man.
Is it the John Carroll of middle of nowhere?
Or is it, what was the made-up high school that they found out? Oh, my God.
Bishop Sycamore.
Yeah, is it Bishop Sycamore's counterpart? Like, we find out it's just like, it's like one room in like Bemidji in Minnesota, something like that. All right, Daryl. So I guess.
Thanks to Keith for clearing up the pronunciation there.
Minot?
I just love that you guessed the T was silent and then tried to.
I never heard of the school. I'm not going to lie. Never heard of the place.
Well, but like, how many times do you see a T?
I did
T?
A quick 5-second Google search on it.
But how many times do you see a school ending with T and you're like, that T is silent? If I know anything, that T is not real.
Well, didn't the French settle that part of the world at some point way back in the 1600s or something?
I've been knowing you for a while. You are a big Huguenot guy. I should have known that. all right, so
wasn't it part of the Louisiana Purchase?
let's move on here from Minot State. Why not, I say. So Deshaun said today that, to explaining the 4th-and-1 play, that Jordan Akins, who was wide open in the flat, that he was a decoy. Does that track with everything you've heard about the 4th-and-1 RPO play?
Greatest decoy ever.
Sensing some sarcasm there, Daryl.
I should hope so. I was laying it on pretty thick.
Yeah, you were. So I'm going to go ahead and say you maybe Deshaun is. But what's weird is Deshaun had a chance to throw Jerome Ford under the bus for the fumble.
Right.
And then didn't.
Well, because he's the one that made the mistake. He put it in the pocket too high.
It looked pretty clean to me there, Daryl.
I'm just saying what I was told.
I'm just saying what I saw. So let's kind of cycle back here to this Raiders game. It's so weird. Like, I think the Browns are 1-point dogs on the road in this one. Do you have a feel for this game and what to expect?
No, I don't. Especially with what's going on with Miles, especially with the condition of the offensive line. I mean, Andrew Berry basically spent the entire 20 minutes open to reporters watching the offensive linemen like a hawk as they went through their drills. I don't have a feel for this. Obviously, we know last year Gardner Minshew tore these guys up in that game with the Colts when he was the quarterback in Indianapolis. It was a very entertaining game. Browns able to pull it out in the end, but you know, Minshew's not a guy that they certainly can take lightly. Obviously, things feel a little unsettled in Las Vegas right now with their quarterback situation. You know, I'm sure we've all heard that story before, right? So gives you an idea of what's going on out west. But, you know, as far as the Browns are concerned, they have some serious red flags right now. And, you know, the quotes are great. The sound bites are great, but they've got to go out there and do it. And right now, I'm not convinced that they're going to be healthy enough to do what they need to do. I don't know that Deshaun Watson is going to be as good as he needs to be, considering the state of the offensive line and the state of his mental clock between his ears when it comes to pocket presence and things like that. The good news is the escapability is starting to return a little bit here. We've seen that in the last two games. But no, I mean, it's really hard for me right now, Nick, to read this game and how the Browns are going to go out to Las Vegas and come out of there with a win to start this three-game road trip.
Darryl, when you look at this team right now, if they go 1-3, they don't have Myles Garrett. Let's say he doesn't play this weekend. Deshaun Watson's struggling, you know, to throw the ball where he needs to. The offensive line is a mash factory. 1-3, are they done for the season?
Yeah, you're not coming out of 1-3. They'll be 2-5 at that point. And I don't see you climbing out. That puts you, I think, October 27th against Baltimore. I just don't see them climbing out of a three games below 500 hole, considering what remains on the schedule, especially after the bye week. And even when you look at the schedule now, Jason, games are a little tougher than we anticipated, right? Washington, all of a sudden, they seem to have their franchise quarterback. That's a much tougher game than we thought it was going to be. Philadelphia, we knew what that would be. Cincinnati's always, I know they're winless right now, but Cincinnati's always a thorn in their side. Baltimore, Chargers, the Saints have started off, to my surprise, incredibly well. And then you just go through the, yeah, I mean, so if you're three games below 500, seven games into the season, Andrew Berry better be scouting top 10 draft picks.
Darryl, pleasant as always, my friend. Me not unhappy with the way that you performed today.
Me not unhappy with Keith correcting my Minnow State take.
Me not believe you. Darryl, be good, buddy.
Someone had to do the journalism on this show. It might as well be Keith.
That makes total sense to me. Be good, buddy.
You bet, guys.
Darryl Ryder brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. I understand why a lot of people feel the way that Darryl said there, but Darryl also went on to say that if they go to 1-3, that it's over. They just don't have. And I got to be honest with you, I just don't get that mentality. I understand why it's doom and gloom. I'm not saying that it doesn't feel that way, but 1-3 when you have 13 games behind it. I don't give a damn about the schedule. Like, the Browns are still a talented team. Are there real concerns? And does, with every injury, does it get a little harder to do it? Yeah. But I think it's a cop-out. If you go to 1-3 and then you're just like, well, I guess they suck. Let's move on to something else. No. Kevin Stefanski's two-time coach of the year. No, Deshaun Watson's getting paid $230 million a year. Figure it out. There's so many teams. Cincinnati has been consistent slow starter and starting 1-2. They're 0-3 this year, and they've then gone to the Super Bowl. Like, I just hate this defeatist mentality of, well, I guess September's over and you're 1-3. I guess they just suck. I guess Cavs are back soon. Guardians in the playoffs. I don't understand that, considering how much football there is to play, even if you lose this weekend.
So let's say you go 1-3. There is still a lot of football to play, but the things I'm looking at right now is, offensively, you're not putting up numbers. Defensively, you might lose Myles Garrett. I know yet. He didn't practice today. At the same time, that A word's going to come back. The Achilles heel, you know, when you have two foot injuries and now all of a sudden the Achilles, that's a scary situation. And the way I look at it, you go 1-3, you're facing a team next week that has a bona fide young quarterback. I mean, and he looked great the other night against the Bengals.
You're talking about Jaden Daniels?
Jaden Daniels. Yeah. He looks amazing.
That dime he threw to McLaurin was just breadbasket.
Yes, very, very good. So now all of a sudden you're facing a guy, let's say they lose that weekend. Now you're 1-4. Who knows what's going to happen after that? And that's the scary part of that schedule.
But I think, I do understand the schedule side of this. Some of this just sounds like spinning our wheels, though, right? Like, I listen, not every team is wondering whether they have to sit their best pass rusher by a mile. I get that. But every team in the NFL deals with injuries. There are plenty of teams that started 1-2.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40... it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
That quite frankly will end up being in the playoffs. Like, to me, I just, like, I understand we'd love it if it could just look pretty and it could just be pretty and everything was, you know, beautiful and sunshine and roses. No, listen, when it goes back to the thing we talked about, the Guardians, when you play 675-700 ball through 80 games, that's not when you find out about your team. It's when you get punched in the mouth. It's when you go through what they went in August. And with the Browns, like last year, they started quick. Then Deshaun gets injured. You had that kind of, I'll say, like that November swoon where you got a great win against Pittsburgh, but then the West Coast trip and you had to go to Flacco. And then the team turned on the Jets. So, yeah, is this a lot of adversity? 100%. Figure it out. They're a veteran club. They're spending $300 million on this roster, even though $350 million with all the payment and all the stuff that they're doing to not get around the cap, but manage the cap on a $260 million payroll. Like, figure it out. And I just think, like, it's never going to look pretty. It is never, very few, like, listen, one day maybe you'll be the Chiefs. And every week is like, ha, 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 did you see what happened? They kicked a field goal. They thought they had us beat. Ha, yeah, okay, but that's not how much, like, Baltimore doesn't live that way. Pittsburgh doesn't live that way. And I think we've just lost some of that resolve that we've had when the teams were crappy. I almost went somewhere else with that. Crappy. Like, guys, this season starts. And if Kevin Stefanski's worth his paycheck, they'll get it righted. If Andy Dickerson is worth his paycheck, he'll get it righted. If Deshaun is worth his paycheck, he's going to get it righted. And if they don't, well, that informs you going forward. They're 1-3. I guess the season's over. Like, in what world is that the reality for anybody in the NFL that isn't a team where the expectations are clearly you're going to have one of the top five picks this next year?
So if you look at last week and when they played the Giants, that was gut check, right? I think a lot of us expected that game to be a W. It didn't happen. They were still close enough in the fourth quarter that they could have pulled something out. Didn't happen. So now you roll into this week and you're saying, okay, if we can figure out how to grind it out, right? That's, this division is the grinding division of saying you're going to pound it hard up the middle. And if you can make some passes here and there, give Deshaun enough time. Just give him that three-step drop, five-step drop. Let him maneuver a little bit and maybe get that pass. Maybe there's one pass in this game where it changes the whole outcome of the season. Who knows?
Well, and I think, like, again, enjoy the ride. And we have not done that with the Browns because of pressure and expectations. And I will say, I think something we're not used to our teams having across the board this kind of expectation, right? I honestly think that's some of why, and I don't think it's Guardians fans. I think it's Cleveland fans in general. We have weaponized the expectations against the Guardians, and we sure did last year. So when they don't meet it, it's you're embarrassing us and, you know, you're acting out in public. You know, it's like your kids being thrown a temper tantrum in Walmart. But, like, we did the same thing with the Cavs this year, and I think we're doing the same thing with the Browns. It's like, I get that 1-3 is going to look bleak. I am not trying to say that it is the best way to start. You will have to dig out of that hole. Teams do it all the time. Just in the same way last year when Deshaun went down for the season, everybody said, you're never going to get, you know, you're not going to win because you don't win with backups. You don't have a choice. And if the choice is we're going to lay down, if the choice is we got punched in the face and we folded, that is a choice. And there are consequences to that choice. And Heel Fargo on Twitter, and of course, social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store, saying, pretty sure Daryl said it would, if the Browns go 1-3 in their next four games, they'd be done. No, the question was, if they lose to the Raiders and they start the season 1-3, are they done? Keith, am I correct? Yeah,
that was the question, but I think Daryl misinterpreted it. I think he thought that we were saying if they go 1-3 in their next four games. Because then he said that would lead up to the Ravens game.
Okay.
And you'd be three games under 500. So I think, in fairness, I think Daryl misinterpreted what it was.
Can I still say screw that guy, though? Is that still on the table? He's my friend. I'm allowed to say that, right? You're allowed to. All right, but I still think, I mean, I think this is more than just a quick fix. And that means they're going to have to fix it over the next probably four or five games. That might lead to another loss that we don't love. But the reality is, I don't need you playing your best football in September. I don't need you playing your best football in October. When November comes around, I need you to be within 500 or just below 500, and then I need you to go kick ass. And that's tough because the schedule goes a bunch of teams. You got a game against Pittsburgh. Who knows if New Orleans is still going to be good. The Chargers have been tough early. You got the Steelers again. You got the Chiefs. You got the Bengals. You got the Dolphins. You got the Ravens. Yep, and that's why it's the NFL, and that's why it's your job to figure it out. Now, we also, because I want to get your take on this, about 3 weeks ago, we first started having the conversation with the Guardians. As the Guardians get ready to finish off this set against the Reds tonight. And I said, I think Alex Cobb's the guy I want on the bump for that first game. And it purely came down to, I still think his stuff's good enough to pitch in the postseason. And he's a veteran. He's been there. I think last night with Tanner Bibee, Tanner might have finally kicked me to give that kid the ball. That was really impressive last night.
What he did last night was outstanding. He got out there. He did what he was supposed to do. He threw quality strikes, got ahead of guys. He, you know, got into some trouble early in the game and was able to get the double play. And I think that for him was the huge confidence late in the season. Because think about it. That was start number 32 for him this year. He's never done that before in his career. So to be able to do that and now kind of roll into the playoffs, you have to give him the ball in game one right now. And then maybe go Alex Cobb game two. But Tanner earned the chance and the right to be game one starter in the playoffs for this Guards team that now looking at it, originally I was like, do they have enough to get through that first series? I think they do now because of their bullpen.
So can I compare it to 2016? In 2016, it was Kluber and three relievers. Well, actually, and you did get a spot start from Ryan Merritt. You did get Josh Tomlin was one of the other guys we're talking about. But mostly, it was Kluber carrying you through most series and then the back end of the bullpen. I think you've got at least two starters between Cobb and Bibee. I think you are four deep of high leverage guys in the bullpen. And then you've got Lively and Williams, who I think can still eat innings even if they don't go six. I think you've got two or three times more of the depth and quality than what you had in 2016. So I think to be saying that going to the playoffs, to me, is a huge sigh of relief. Yeah, the Yankees had a better regular season rotation. Well, they just lost Nestor Cortez. Like, okay, it's not about who has the best rotation. It's about who can put together the best amount of innings. I think you got dudes for days there.
Well, and you're going to see different matchups in the playoffs. It's not going to be starter goes and he faces his two times through the lineup or maybe three times through the lineup. It's going to be the leverage situation that happens maybe in the third inning, maybe in the fourth inning. We saw that with Terry Francona before. He would go in and he brought in Andrew Miller early in games because that was the game right there. That was the game on the line. And Steven might do the exact same thing. We don't know that, but what we do like about him so far is that he's aggressive. He hasn't changed the course at all yet this year. He's stuck by his methodology and says, hey, this is the way I'm coaching in season. This is the way I'm going to coach in the playoffs. And it hopefully will work. And we look at it that you can minimize an offensive lineup with what the rotation is and the bullpen is for the Guardians.
I also think the idea of Gavin Williams as the bulk man on Sunday, the season finale, I think it tells you that they might get creative with his usage. Whether that's as a guy that maybe you put an opener and then surprise him with Gavin Williams, or maybe it's maybe they see more value in like a multi-inning, high-leverage spot for him to protect that arm, which, again, I don't think he's got 100% right this year. I don't know which way you should go. I'm intrigued with either one if it's not him in the rotation.
Well, I think looking, you know, in the future, he's going to be the dude.
Yeah.
You know, when it's all said and done, you have a guy from the right side that's 6'5", 6'6". I mean, just a big donkey. And you give him the ball, you say, Gavin, go out and do your thing for one or two innings. Maybe go and face a lineup one time through, so that gives you three innings there. That's going to be a huge fixture for these guards moving forward.
I also think the Walters thing is interesting because, again, this is a kid who's just been up for about a month, but that stuff plays in October. You know, it's like it's one of those things where you put a kid who's not ready, who's still getting used to the big leagues, you can ruin relievers. You can ruin anybody in any sport, but relievers especially, there's some sort of fungibility with them. But man, I got to tell you, you start with him for an inning or two as an opener, and then you go to a Boyd, or then you go to a Lively, or then you go to Gavin. That is, I mean, five innings, six innings of unsurmountable stuff there.
Yeah, it'll be tough for any other lineup to match up with what the guards are going to throw out there on the mound. You know, and for them offensively, as long as they can do their part, score timely runs in the playoffs, minimize it, keep it in a three-inning increment. You win the first three innings, you win the second three innings, and then you close it out with Class A. I think that's going to be a big picture that we look forward to. I'm excited to go see this. I'm actually going to the game tonight.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to leave from here. I'm going to go watch the game. I'm going to see how good this kid really is, you know, and kind of put a perspective on it. So we'll be able to talk good about it tomorrow.